And here we are. It all comes down to this. Tied ball game, no time left on the clock. With one more point, they'll pull out the win. Here's the snap. Holder puts it down. The kick is up. And the extra point is good. The NFL exporter has done it again. NFL and fantasy football fans, it is the NFL Exporter checking in week 11, Monday Night Football. I'm not quite sure who you need, but it always works out this way every Monday. I'm going to assume it is nothing but Pittsburgh Steeler affiliated people, players, I should say, that fantasy owners need. I'm talking about Ben Roethlisberger, Le'Veon Bell, Antonio Brown, and I would assume Martavis Bryant has to be a popular guy right now since being picked up off the waiver wire within the last couple weeks. Perhaps the Pittsburgh Steelers defense, special teams, maybe place kicker Sean Swisham. If you do have anybody from Tennessee, I'm going to assume you probably were in dire straits having to go with Bishop Sankey, the running back, or perhaps Kendall Wright or Justin Hunter, wide receivers for Tennessee. Again, I don't think anybody should have any Tennessee Titans in their lineup unless you know something that I don't. Nonetheless, I've got a great show for you lined up today, as always, including a special guest. Mike is going to be joining us a little bit later on in the show. He is with NFL Fantasy Football. He's going to come in and talk some important and trending topics with us. A couple weeks now, we are away from the fantasy football playoffs. After tonight's game, if you're like me, in an NFL.com league, you have 2 weeks left in your season. In most other leagues, where they do not have a first-round bye in Week 14, you have 3 weeks left. And so we are certainly getting down to the nitty-gritty. Amazing how this football season has flown right by. Nonetheless, that is the reality of the situation. Before we go ahead and get into the show today, let's make sure you know how to connect with us on our social networks. That is the most easiest and convenient way to keep up on the latest news and updates. You can find myself, the NFL Exporter. Follow me on Twitter. At NFL Exporter. You also want to go to facebook.com/NFL Exporter there. Especially if you are a fantasy owner, send a friend request over to that page. I've got tons of fantasy owners who post to that page. It's very interactive. I leave a ton of good information for other owners to post to. Everybody's kind of commenting on everybody's stuff, so I know that you would certainly enjoy that. Also, for behind-the-scenes footage and exclusive interviews, like, for example, last week I had an interview with Kevin Bowen. He is the writer for the Indianapolis Colts. Had a chance to talk with him heading into that big game against New England, which happened last night. And so for our behind-the-scenes footage, exclusive interviews, make sure you subscribe to my page over on YouTube.com. Just click on channels in the search engine, put NFL Exporter. For all the above, that is spelled NFLEXPORTER, all right? The call-in number to the show, certainly if you would like to call in and chop it up with us about fantasy football, we would certainly enjoy that. The call-in number is 347-637-3220. So don't be afraid to use that number and call in. And then also to follow the fantasy sports brand itself, which is here on Blog Talk Radio, where I do the Extra Point on Mondays. Myself as well as Jerry Taylor, we do the Master Plan each and every Sunday morning at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, along with a lot of other great shows. Make sure you follow us on Twitter, and that is going to be at Fan Sports and Paul. So that's FANSPORTSAND. POL. All right. So make sure that you do that. Again, the most easiest and convenient way to keep up with us throughout the course of the week. let's go ahead and jump right into the action. We're going to get things started today, taking a look at our top 10 scorers from fantasy football from week 11. Jonas Gray, running back from the New England Patriots, I've seen this guy was started in 1.3% of fantasy football leagues. I'm quite sure all of us wish we had him in our lineups. I can imagine what he did in leagues with bonuses. But in standard format, this guy racked up 43 points, had 38 rushes, 199 yards, 4 touchdowns. Nobody, I mean absolutely nobody, seen that game coming last night. If you look at what Gray has done as a starter against the Jets, he had 3 carries for 12 yards. The following week against Chicago, 17 for 86. Last week against Denver, or I should say in week 9 against Denver, 12 for 33. The Patriots are a team that I tell you, a very creative team. Just came out and ran it straight at and down the throat to the Colts. So, again, 43 points for this guy. Of course, he's going to be the hottest guy off the waiver wire. But I'm looking at next week playing against Detroit. I'm quite sure we've all missed this stellar day from this young player. Next, Mike Evans of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. My goodness, this guy, 7 catches, 209 yards, 2 touchdowns. That was good for 32 points in standard formats. This guy just burned me big time. Now, I was able to benefit from Evans in 2 other leagues that I have, so I certainly will take that. But he hurt me yesterday. I played against him as well. Luckily, in that league, I have already, or I should say as of yesterday, which is my NFL.com league, was able to go ahead, wrap up a playoff berth, which I should say I won my division, which means that I've got a playoff berth and I've got a first-round bye. So these next 2 weeks, I can kind of just kick back and hopefully my guys stay healthy. But Mike Evans, what an effort. This young guy is definitely coming into his own. We'll speak about him a little bit more when we break down each game. Next, Aaron Rodgers. I mean, this guy just continues to light the airwaves up. Not only did he give you 341 yards and 0 interceptions, also chipped in 3 rushes for 32 yards. He just looks excellent, plain and simple. Coming in fourth, you had Jamaal Charles, running back for the Kansas City Chiefs. And I will go ahead first and foremost and send my apologies for even disrespecting this guy. I had Jamaal Charles as one of my top 5 sits this past week. I actually had him on a couple weeks ago against the Jets. And let me just go ahead and clear the air while I have the opportunity to do so. I never told owners to sit Jamaal Charles, but it is my job. I will certainly put my neck out there and take the risk. And sometimes when it comes to doing my top 5 starts and sits of the week, I have a difficult time finding players to sit. And this was one of those weeks. I mean, the matchups were extremely favorable. I try not to put the same guy, whether the top 5 starts or top 5 sits. I try not to put the same guys on the list every week, even every month. You know, if I can kind of change it up every week, I like to do so. And I had a very difficult time finding players to recommend that you sit. So when I looked at Jamaal Charles, considering this dink and dump offense that Kansas City brings to the table, I thought the Seahawks matched up extremely well. Seahawks came in ranked 4th against the run. I just thought they would load the box up and force Alex Smith to beat him with his arm. But they played their conventional defense, and Jamaal Charles, what a stud he is, 20 carries, 159 yards, 2 TDs, also had 19 receiving yards. That was good for 26 points. Coming in at number 5 with the Packers defense and special teams, these guys had 3 touchdowns yesterday, an interception ran back, a punt return, as well as a fumble. That was good for 26 points. Jay Cutler, and this is what we talk about with Jay Cutler. He's a guy who is not a good quarterback. But when it comes to fantasy football, you live with his turnovers. Yesterday, 330 yards, 3 TDs, 2 interceptions, also had 21 rushing yards. I'm definitely looking forward to speaking about his situation a little bit later on in the show, as well as the Bears overall. Coming in next, you had Russell Wilson, another guy who, very interesting, did not pass for 200 yards for the second straight game, but he did have 2 rushing, 2 passing TDs, but he also had 8 rushes for 71 yards, and that is what is really keeping Russell Wilson as a must-start week in and week out basis, the damage that he can do on the ground with his feet. So you got to love that there. Next, we have Eddie Lacy, the Green Bay Packers. Had a touchdown on the ground, a touchdown in the air. That was good for a 114 all-purpose yards. Just really is finding his way now in this Green Bay offense, even if he can't do it all on the ground. You've seen him starting to get involved in the passing game a bit. And then you have Brandon Marshall of the Minnesota Vikings. We all knew this was a great matchup for him. 7 catches, 90 yards, 2 touchdowns there. And then rounding out our top 10, and these guys here are all have 21 points as well. We're talking about Mr. Jekyll and Hyde, I like to call him, Andy Dalton. Absolutely don't know what you're going to get from this guy on a week-in and week-out basis. Yesterday, 220 yards, 3 TDs, no interceptions. That was good for 21 points. And then you had the Tampa Bay Buccaneers defense. I tell you, these guys just really took full advantage of RG3 and that struggling Redskins offense. They had a touchdown to go along with some sacks there. I'm trying to pull up the stats real quick here. Yeah, they had 2 interceptions, a fumble return, a fumble recovery, a touchdown, as well as some sacks. And so Tampa Bay Buccaneers defense, I don't think anyone saw that coming, how bad they have played. But that is the reality of the situation right now when you're looking at the Washington Redskins. Real quick, let's just look at the top 5 players from each position before we get into our games. You got Aaron Rodgers with 28 points, Jay Cutler, Russell Wilson, Andy Dalton. So I just touched base on all of their stats. Coming in at number 5, we had 2 players tied. It was a Josh McCown, 288 yards, 2 TDs against the Redskins. And Andrew Luck had 303 yards, 2 TDs, 1 interception. Also chipped in 15 yards on the ground. That was good for 18 points as well. And again, this is in standard format. We told you about Jonas Gray and Jamal Charles, as well as Eddie Lacy. Those were your top 3 running backs. Coming in at number 4, we had Matt Forte, 117 yards on the ground, also 58 in the air. Jeremy Hill, 27 carries, 152 yards, also gave you 13 yards through the air. And Alfred Blue popped in. I think he did exactly what Arian Foster would have done, maybe with the exception of a touchdown, 36 carries, 156 yards in a win yesterday for the Texans at Cleveland. That was good for 15 points. Moving over to your wide receivers, we just gave you the stats for Mike Evans and Brandon Marshall. Those were respectively your number 1 and 2 receivers in fantasy football. Funny, I played both of those guys on the same team yesterday. Next, it was Alshon Jeffrey, 11 catches, 135 yards, and a TD. 17 targets this guy had yesterday. So big game for him. That was good for 19 points. Coming in at number 4, you had 2 guys tied at 18. Kenny Britt came out of the woodworks yesterday, hooking up with quarterback Sean Hill early on a 69-yard TD reception that propelled him to 4 catches for 128 yards. That was good for 18 points. A.J. Green, good to see him back at full health, 6 catches, 127 yards, a TD. And then at number 5, rounding out there, you got Michael Floyd for the Arizona Cardinals. Only had 2 catches in the first quarter for 54 yards, but they counted. Those were 2 TDs. That was good for 17 points. Moving over to your tight end, top 5 yesterday, Kobe Flinger, 7 catches, 144 yards. That was good for 14 points. Jermaine Gresham for the Cincinnati Bengals had 2 short goal line touchdowns. That helped him to get 13 points. Rob Gronkowski, late touchdown to seal the deal for the Patriots. He had 4 catches, 71 yards, a TD. That was good for 13 points as well. Coming in at number 3, Larry Donald, solid game. 3 catches, 54 yards, a touchdown. That was good for 11 points for the Giants. You had Garrett Graham, tight end for the Houston Texans. 2 catches, 34 yards, a TD. That was good for 9 points. Rounding out our top 5, we have 4 guys tied with 6. Greg Olsen, Tony Moyaki, he's now with Seattle, used to be with Kansas City. Rhett Ellison for Minnesota. And Tim Wright for the New England Patriots rounded out your top 5 at the tight end position. Next, you had for your defense special team, the Packers and Buccaneers were 1 and 2. We just talked about them. San Francisco 49ers, 5 interceptions yesterday on Eli Manning. That helped propel them to 15 points. Arizona Cardinals defense was straight locked down yesterday. Really surprised about that at home against Detroit. Didn't even give up a touchdown. That was good for 12 points. And then the San Diego Chargers defense, obviously anybody playing the Raiders right now are going to have a great deal of success. They cashed in for 10 points. Your top kickers yesterday, coming in at number 1 was Greg Zuerlein, 20 points for the St. Louis Rams. That was huge there. Matt Bryant, the second straight week of 15 points for him for the Atlanta Falcons. Randy Bullock of the Houston Texans with 13. Phil Dawson of the 49ers with 11. And then we had 3 kickers tied with 10, that being Adam Vinatieri, Mike Nugent, and Mason Crosby. We are going to run to a quick commercial break. When we come back, we're going to go ahead and start breaking down our games from yesterday, and particularly our predictions that we made on the master plan. So make sure and come back and join the NFL Exporter here on the Extra Point. Don't forget, coming up a little bit later on in the show, special guest Mike is stopping in from NFL Fantasy Football to chop it up with us. So don't touch that dial. We'll be right back after these messages.
Thursday night is the right time to kick back and listen to the FSP Crew Show as they break down the weekend sports and prepare you for Thursday night football. 8 p.m. Eastern, just before the game starts, Jerry the Master Taylor hosts the show with Jeff the Joker Goldberg and Mike the Bookie Monster Wright. The three gentlemen debate and discuss a little bit of this, a little bit of that, a little bit of everything on the FSP Crew Show every Thursday night on blogtalkradio.com/VICHBK, 8 p.m. Eastern. You can listen at spotonradio.webs.com after the show as it streams 24/7, 365, and listen to other informative programs as well. Information, motivation, variety.
All right, everyone. Welcome back to the Extra Point, NFL Exporter. Let's go ahead and start taking a look at our Week 11 games from around the NFL. Things got started with the Chicago Bears winning at home 21-13 over the Minnesota Vikings. And I will say this first and foremost, I certainly understand after getting blown out and playing so bad all year long, why the Bears would be, I would say, satisfied with a victory. But I have no respect for these guys. These guys were laughing and joking on the sideline yesterday. Brandon Marshall was so happy to get a couple of touchdowns. They were so pumped up, and I'm like, you know, you barely beat Minnesota by 8 points. It's a joke to me. So I don't have any respect for these guys over in Chicago. I like Matt Forte. I respect him. I did not see him in that bunch, but I've seen Alshon Jeffrey, Brandon Marshall, Jay Cutler just kind of clowning around on the sideline when they were only up 14-10 in this game at halftime. I mean, it's not like they won this game convincingly by any stretch of the imagination. And Jay Cutler continues to be a turnover machine. Two more interceptions yesterday, and it could have easily been four. He could have easily had a couple of touchdowns taken away. Yesterday, when I seen how the Jay Cutler was on two of his three touchdown passes, the deep one to Brandon Marshall for 42 yards where the ball hung in the air forever, and we all knew this was going to be a great matchup for Chicago because of the inexperienced secondary of the Minnesota Vikings. But he threw the ball up for grabs. The defender just was not able to make a play on the football, so that could have easily been knocked away. And then on this touchdown to Alshon Jeffrey, he threw it into coverage. You know, Jeffrey was able to come up with the ball, but those could have easily been interceptions instead of completed passes for Jay Cutler. Nonetheless, let's deal with the reality of the situation. Again, he had 330 yards, three TDs, two interceptions. Matt Forte, again, had 26 carries, 117 yards, also gave you 58 through the air. Jeffrey and Marshall both went off. Jeffrey, 11 for 135. Marshall, 90 for two touchdowns. And so that was that. And ladies and gentlemen, I'm sorry, I have a piece of equipment just dropped. Give me 1 second. We're going to run to a quick commercial break. I'll be right back with you in a moment.
Looking for fantasy sports advice? How about informative conversation? Look no further, as the Master Plan features two men that can help in both areas. Jerry the Master Taylor and Lance the NFL Exporter Goodman provide you with a fantasy fix live every Sunday morning on the Master Plan at blogtalkradio.com/VICHBK at 10 a.m. Eastern Time. You can listen at spotonradio.webs.com after the show as it streams 24/7, 365, and listen to other informative programs as well. That's the Master Plan, Sundays 10 a.m. Eastern on blogtalkradio.com/VICHBK and streaming at spotonradio.webs.com. Information, motivation, variety, the Master Plan.
And
If you want to add a little spice to your talk radio, try No Chaser with Mac Williams and Jerry Taylor every Friday evening at 7 p.m. Eastern, featured at blogtalkradio.com/VICHBK. Arguably, No Chaser is the most, shall we say, controversial show in the lineup. Let me give you a couple of direct quotes. If LeBron took a shit in the middle of the street in broad daylight, his Boy Scouts would say it's the greatest one ever. Here's another. Y'all dumb donkeys keep believing what Obama says. Just watch. This country is going to get worse, and I'm just going to sit back and say, I told you so. I can only assume this is why the show is called No Chaser. You can also visit fantasysportsandpolitics.webs.com for archives, advertising, and other information. It's No Chaser with Mac Williams and Jerry Taylor. Information, motivation, variety.
All right, everybody. Appreciate you holding on there. Just had a piece of technical difficulty. But getting back to this Chicago-Minnesota game real quick, I think that what we expected took place. Jay Cutler was able to do what he needed to against this young, inexperienced Minnesota secondary. Again, had the two interceptions. Matt Forte, Alshon Jeffery, Brandon Marshall, they did what you expected. I think the guy that we're seeing fall off here is Martellus Bennett, the tight end, only four catches for 29 yards. You take a look at what Minnesota did. Nothing too impressive on the offensive side of the football. I don't even know who this guy. Charles Johnson had six catches for 87 yards. So, I mean, as far as for Greg Jennings and Cordero Patterson, Patterson, two catches, 24 yards. Greg Jennings, one for four. I mean, at this point, I don't think you should be playing any Minnesota Vikings players on offense. I mean, maybe you roll the die with McKinnon or Asiata, you know, sometime if the matchup is right. But certainly not a team in Minnesota that offensively right now, you know that they're going to continue to struggle. Moving on to our next game, you had the Houston Texans get an impressive victory on the road, beating the Cleveland Browns 23-7. And for Houston, you know, if you had Alfred Blueing yesterday, got a big game out of him. This guy was able to get 36 carries for 156 yards. The Texans actually ran the football 54 times for 213 yards. I mean, they just completely ran it down the Cleveland Browns' throat. New starting quarterback Ryan Mallett, I think he was the difference. You know, when I looked at this Texans team throughout the course of the year, their struggles were certainly associated with Ryan Fitzpatrick's inability to be effective throwing the football. Mallett had no problem at all, 20 out of 30, 211 yards, two TDs. He did have one interception, but for a guy in his very first football game starting with a new team, very impressive there. DeAndre Hopkins, four catches, 80 yards. Andre Johnson, seven catches, 68 yards. Hopkins had eight targets, Johnson nine. So if you have Andre Johnson, I think there's some hope. I actually made a trade for him maybe Friday. I just traded Reggie Wayne for Andre Johnson. Kind of low-risk trade, both of us not really utilizing those guys. Their stats were about the same, but on my end, I feel that Johnson has some upside with Mallett being in there, so that's why I made the deal for Johnson. And, again, I think you like the nine targets. Just have to find a way to get his yardage up some. J.J. Wyatt, another TD catch this year. It's amazing. This guy has more touchdowns than a lot of fantasy football wide receivers who were taken in the first couple rounds. He just continues to be a monster. You flip over to Cleveland's side of the football. Brian Hoyer was decent. He did have 330 yards, but he had 30 incompletions. This guy was 20 out of 50 passing the football. Very, very inaccurate. Those numbers don't move you at all. As I had suggested yesterday, Andrew Hawkins was a good pickup for the day at 97 yards and a touchdown, and it's risky. You know, it's real risky when you look at players like Andrew Hawkins and some of these other guys because the games are important now, and it's like you want to pick them, but if the guy goes out and has a dud, then you're hurt. But if he has a game like this, you're kind of saying, man, you wish you would have picked him. Nonetheless, I think the biggest travesty that you see going on here right now is this circus that Cleveland is running in their backfield. I think this is an absolute shame. And I'm not only saying that because I have Terrence West on my fantasy football team. I think this is just a travesty, though, from the standpoint of, you know, this was week 11. And obviously, Ben Tate was a guy that Cleveland was not too satisfied with. So, rightfully so, I should say, they benched him. After he had two good games when he came back against Tennessee, against Pittsburgh, the last 3 weeks he was able to only get about maybe 74 yards on like 45 carries. I don't have that stat in front of me, but to make a long story short, the guy had near 50 carries and didn't even have 100 yards. And he starts whining and complaining this week about the numbers of carries that he's getting. They put Terrence West in. Now, last week, West started. Had a very productive game against Cincinnati. The guy had 24 carries for 94 yards and a touchdown. And so I had him on the bench last week. You know, I wanted to see what he did in his first week of action. Once I got whiffed it, he was going to be the next guy in line. So conveniently, as a fantasy football game is progressing here through 1 o'clock, I'm looking at my scorecard, and I'm noticing that Terrence West only has 1 point. And I'm saying, well, what in the world is going on here? So I go over, I click on a note next to his name. Lo and behold, I don't know when this news came out. I guess that we dropped the ball here yesterday on the show. So apologize to any Terrence West owners. But yesterday, a note appears saying that because Isaiah Crowell had a better week of practice, that the Browns decided to start him this week. And I'm like, are you serious? I mean, are you really serious? You're going based off the fact that a guy had a better week of practice, you're on week 11, and you're still switching your starting running back? You know, how does Terrence West getting 94 yards and a touchdown the week before, how does that not constitute him as the starter for the next game? I don't understand that. So right now, if you've got any of those running backs, good luck to you. I'm done with these guys. I'm dropping Terrence West this week. I don't care what happens. I'm going to be honest with you. I'm upset about it right now. If I can get my hands on Crowell and keep West, because they play Atlanta this week, I might do that. But, again, I'm already in the playoffs in that league, so it doesn't matter. But I'm just done. I mean, and to me, it's just causing a ton of confusion because I'm looking at it like, what are you doing to Terrence West's confidence, who had 5 carries for 12 yards yesterday? Ben Tate obviously is frustrated. He's done 2 carries for negative 9 yards. So I'm like, and then Crowell fumbles yesterday. So I'm just like, you know, it's a joke. I don't see how the offensive line can get any continuity. Long story short, if you have a Cleveland Browns running back, good luck to you trying to figure out the silly enigma of a puzzle that they're running over there. It's just a flat out joke. Moving on to Seattle and Kansas City, very good game here. Taking a look at the stats from this one, we told you about what Russell Wilson did. Alex Smith was his, I guess he was a little bit under average, 11 out of 16, 108 yards. The only pass was like 150 anyway, very low budget there. Both running backs are very effective. Jamal Charles really shined, though, the 159 yards. He averaged 8 yards a carry. I mean, this guy's unbelievable what he was able to do against Seattle's defense, who, let's face it, it's not the same as last year. They lost Brandon Mebane, the defensive tackle for the season last week, so maybe that attributed to their run defense already being pretty leaky this year. Marshawn Lynch, 24 carries, 124 yards. So both of these backs did what you expect. I think that Charles was, though, more of a surprise because of how limited Kansas City is. When you're looking at Kansas City yesterday, their top receiver was Travis Kelce, 3 catches for 37 yards. And so, I mean, it's just funny that Kansas City can continue winning ball games in this magnitude. I don't think you can look across the NFL yesterday and find another team where their leading receiver had 3 catches. That was the most catches that a Kansas City receiver had for 37 yards, and their team still won. It's unbelievable. When you look at Seattle, it's not too far of a cry-off as well. I would simply stay away from both of these teams' wide receivers. Yes, Doug Baldwin yesterday had 6 catches for 45 yards and a touchdown, but you can't depend on that touchdown weekly. I think the 45 yards you can. That's why I dropped them the week before. So that was pretty much it in this one. You know, defenses for both teams played well, but this was a game where I think Seattle lost it, and I'll talk about that in some of my shows that aren't fantasy-related, but I have kicker Stephen Hauschka. There was an opportunity for Seattle with 7 minutes left to kick a field goal to cut the lead to 1 and get the ball back again to potentially try and get a field goal to win it. They went for it, and I understand being aggressive, but I think it kind of whispers that they're not confident in their defense at all right now. Moving on to your next game, you had the Falcons at Panthers. This certainly was a game that very sloppy, very ugly. Looking at the stat lines here, the guys who really stood out for you, Roddy White, Definitely been stepping his game up the last couple of weeks. He has 75 yards, a TD, 8 receptions. Last week against Tampa Bay, he had the 72 yards and a TD. And so it's appealing as much as you like Julio Jones. This was Julio Jones' sixth straight game without a touchdown. Only had 59 receiving yards. And, I mean, at this point, I don't want to say you're worried, but this was a guy that you were heavily relying on, and he's just not putting up the numbers. I see that they don't seem to go to him in the red zone. I've seen a couple of times he was lined up one-on-one. I'm not seeing fade routes. They're kind of stuck on doing these wide receiver screens, which teams are hip to right now. And so that's that. Matt Ryan, another decent day, 268 a TD. He's completely fell off. His stats are nowhere near where they were at the beginning of the year. Cam Newton's numbers added up at the end of the day. It was very ugly, though. He had the two interceptions. He's just not playing well in Carolina's offense. Kelvin Benjamin, quite sure his fantasy owners continue to be happy, though. Fantasy football, it doesn't matter how you get it, as long as you does. You do, rather. Benjamin was very quiet during the first half, but in the fourth quarter came alive, ended with 9 catches, 109 yards, and a TD there to make his owners very, very happy. Moving over to Cincinnati, playing the New Orleans Saints, and I tell you, this Drew Brees and this Saints offense, it's bad this year. Saints now 4-6. They're not even in first place in their division anymore. You know, looking at the Saints team, you're just scratching your head. Mark Ingram yesterday, 23 carries, so he continues to get the workload, but only 67 yards of Cincinnati. And you know what's going to happen. I mean, NFL teams are not stupid. Ingram came into this one with 3 straight games over 100 yards, so you knew that was the main focus of Cincinnati, and any team I think that was going to play New Orleans yesterday was going to shut down Mark Ingram. So Cincinnati did what they had to do there. You're looking at New Orleans receivers, and it was the same thing that you heard me talk about on this show. You know, how many receivers is Drew Brees throwing to yesterday? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 different guys again. I mean, how can any receiver for the Saints be consistent when Drew Brees, religiously, he does it every week, throwing to 9 and 10 different receivers. So best of luck there. I will say in this one, Brandon Cooks, the talented young rookie receiver, suffered a broken thumb. He's going to be out 4 to 6 weeks. And so I think Marcus Colson and Kenny Stills certainly have some added value now. I'm going to look at Stills myself. Colson, you know, maybe I think you need to look at the matchups. Colson, just a slow receiver. Worked in the slot, very low-budget routes he's running. Again, with Cooks out, without question, his targets are going to increase. But watch the matchups, looking to see what teams the Saints are going to be playing. I think Kenny Stills is a safer play because he has a big playability downfield. He did have 32 yards and a touchdown. Jimmy Graham completely missing yesterday, 3 catches for 29 yards. Just horrible. You look at Cincinnati, though, Andy Dalton again, shine. Very accurate with the football, 16 out of 22. 220 yards, 3 TDs. Jeremy Hill gave him the balance they needed on the ground, eating up 152 yards on 27 carries. Had a 62-yard run. And then A.J. Green, 6 catches, 127 yards, and a TD. The guy who was missing yesterday, Mohamed Sanu, 3 catches for 23 yards. Did have 6 targets, but this game was so lopsided and so far out of reach early. It was 20-3 with 6 minutes to go in the third quarter. Really kind of changed the complexion of this game, in which you thought it was going to be a high-scoring shootout, which I'm quite sure Sanu would have been in. So continue to play him with confidence, even though his numbers have kind of fell off the last couple weeks. Next, you had Tampa Bay at Washington, and as we told you in this one, this was all about rookie Mike Evans. 209 yards on 7 receptions, 2 TDs. On his second touchdown, just to tell you how bad this Redskins defense is, they had a linebacker covering this guy, and it was just easy. He just ran right past him. McCown sat and watched and just threw the ball over his head, easy touchdown. So big game for Mike Evans. This guy has certainly turned into a monster and a must-start weekly now. I think he's without question the number one receiver there. Vincent Jackson, only 3 catches, 43 yards on 4 targets. Evans had 9. Their running back situation continues to be a struggle as well, so I say you stay away from Tampa Bay running back. Bobby Rainey, who we all thought was going to be the starter once Doug Martin went down, really didn't do anything to lose the job, but the writing's on the wall for this Tampa Bay team. not going to make the playoffs. So they're really taking a good look at rookie running back Charles Sims, who continues to do nothing on the ground as well. 13 carries, 36 yards, you know, 3 catches for 8 yards. So it's a joke there for Tampa Bay. I think at this point, look at the matchups. If you're interested in Josh McCown, I mean, he has had 2 decent outings. I think the thing you know about McCown is Tampa Bay is just going to pass the ball pretty much every down because they can't run. So he's going to have an opportunity to put up big stats. You just want to watch for turnovers. But without question, Mike Evans is your must-start guy there. Looking at the Redskins, RG3, another long day at the office, sacked 6 times. He can't escape. You know, he can't escape. These teams are going to continue to blitz him. Had the 2 turnovers through the air. You know, fumbled again, even though it was recovered on the ground. Alfred Morris had a decent day for you. Gave you 132 all-purpose yards, yet could not find the end zone, although he did have 20 carries for 96 yards. DeSean Jackson, obviously very frustrated, 4 catches for 35 yards. Pierre Garçon, he's just an afterthought in this offense at this point. 1 catch, 6 yards. Jordan Reed, 2 for 22. I mean, I honestly don't know what's going on with these Redskins at this point. Very toxic. Outside of Alfred Morris, it appears, unless it's a great matchup, you're rolling the dice with a team that you see is certainly self-destructing internally. Just got a lot of unhappy players right now on that Washington Redskins team. Moving on to our next game, you had the St. Louis Rams, surprisingly here. I think the bookie certainly cleaned up on this one big time yesterday. I hope nobody put their mortgage or their life on the line in this one, because this was an absolute stunner. To be honest with you, I started to play the Rams defense yesterday. This defense plays well every week. Jeff Fisher, I've got to give him a lot of credit. I don't know how he gets his team motivated to play, but that defense, is they play with a lot of enthusiasm and passion. You've seen them shut down the 49ers 2 weeks ago. Last week in Arizona, their defense, they were up 14-10. Before late turnovers gave Arizona the win. They come back this weekend at home. That's what I was looking at home. That defense is like they're on a track field. I mean, they fly around to the football. And so Peyton Manning did what he always does, 389 yards, had a touchdown, but they got him for 2 interceptions. You can see he was very frustrated out there yesterday. The problem that you have with Denver right now is that they can't run the football. And I'm speaking just from a pure football standpoint. If Denver does not find a way to run the football, they're not going. They may not even make it back to the Super Bowl. This is not going to cut it. 10 carries for 28 yards. That was part of the problem yesterday. You look in the air. Look, Demaryius Thomas 7 for 103. Emmanuel Sanders 5 for 102 and a touchdown. Now Sanders was knocked out with a concussion, so you want to watch that. He's going to go through the normal test to see how he does this week. C.J. Anderson gave you double digits, had 86 yards on 88 receptions. So in PPR leagues, he did great for you. Julius Thomas left this one with an ankle injury, only had 2 catches for 3 yards. And you know what? He's killing me right now. In my ESPN league, there's a high likelihood. Now, I still have 3 games left. I'm going to be 6-5 after this week. But he killed me yesterday. I ended up losing this game by 9 points. And with him not having a single point, coupled with Calvin Johnson's struggles, who we'll get to in a minute, coupled with Tom Brady, a couple interceptions, really cost me. So Julius Thomas just continues to be a huge disappointment. You look at the Rams yesterday, Trey Mason finally popped through after 3 rough outings. We knew he wasn't going to perform well at KC, knew he wasn't going to perform well against Seattle, knew he wasn't going to perform well playing against last week against Arizona. But had a strong outing yesterday, and it was really because he could get the football. 29 carries, 113 yards. He looks good. Certainly expect him to have some better matchups the rest of the way, perhaps. It was Kenny Britt through the air, 4 catches, 128 yards, and a TD. And I apologize. I really criticized the Rams for bringing in Sean Hill, the old veteran who is kind of a statue in the pocket, but protected the football yesterday, 20 out of 29, 220 yards, a TD. That was pretty much it. Again, this Rams defense played well, though. 2 sacks, some hard hits, really just got really physical in the face of the Denver Broncos yesterday. Moving on, it was the Giants losing to the 49ers in this one. Not a lot to rave about. Michael Crabtree, 85 yards and a touchdown. Frank Gore gave you 95 yards on the ground. Colin Kaepernick continues to be average at best, especially for the new contract he got. But again, I think the 49ers right now are concerned with winning the football. I'm extremely worried about that 49ers offense. I'm going to talk about them in some of my other football shows during the week. But if you get 5 interceptions. That's how many times they intercepted Eli Manning yesterday. And you can only put up 16 points. Your offense is bad, and that's exactly what the 49ers offense is right now. For the New York Giants, I think the thing that most fantasy owners are happy about, Rashard Jennings' return to the lineup. You knew he wasn't going to have a big day, especially against the 49ers defense, but was able to get 18 carries. So you know he's back healthy, should get stronger and be able to handle the workload moving forward. Odell Beckham Jr. gave you 93 yards, and then Reuben Randle gave you 7 for 112. I think if nothing else right now, you can bank on the Giants passing the football an awful lot because they're having serious trouble running the football. Another team yesterday who not impressive at all. We're talking about the San Diego Chargers barely beating the Oakland Raiders 13-6. You take a look at the box score at this one, and you're looking at stats that don't move anybody. Phillip Rivers, 193 yards and a touchdown. Rushing the football, I think you're happy to see Ryan Matthews back up there, out there. He had 16 carries for 70 yards, so you know he's going to get stronger. Like Rashard Jennings, for the Giants came back. Both of those guys, as they get healthier, should pick up more of a workload. Phillip Rivers, though, his top receiver yesterday, Keenan Allen, 8 catches, 63 yards. Malcolm Floyd got the one touchdown where he's just jumping over guys. There really was no skill involved in that. 44 yards, a TD. Antonio Gates only 32 yards, so I'm looking at this team for San Diego, and I see them falling behind quickly in that AFC conference. You take a look at, the Raiders. Derek Carr, rookie, same thing every week you can expect for him, only completing about 50% of his passes, 172 yards, no touchdowns. Oakland, again, we told you they're amongst the worst teams in the NFL rushing, 19 total carries for 71 total yards. McFadden and Jones-Drew, they're a joke. Looking at the Raiders receivers, nothing. I mean, just nothing. I'm looking 2 catches, 40 yards, so nothing to rave about there. This was a game that was very boring. Whatever. Moving on to the next game, you had the Packers continuing to roll at home back-to-back weeks. These guys putting up 50 points. Just blasted the Eagles. Never even had a chance in this one. Before you looked up, it was 17-0 in the first quarter. 30-3. And right before halftime, and Aaron Rodgers, this guy just continues to dice up any defense. I can tell you this right now. If your defense and you can't get any pressure on Aaron Rodgers, don't even bother coming to the stadium. The level that this guy is playing at right now, how accurate that he is being with the football, it's just amazing. It's just amazing. And so it was all about Aaron Rodgers, all about Eddie Lacy, Jordy Nelson. 4 catches, 109 yards, and a TD. They're just killing it right now. You should be playing Aaron Rodgers, Eddie Lacy, Randall Cobb, and Jordy Nelson with extreme confidence. For Philadelphia, Mark Sanchez in a losing effort. Good fantasy numbers, 346, 2 TDs, 2 interceptions. LeSean McCoy, another game without a touchdown, did have 23 carries, 88 yards. Jordan Matthews continues to be Sanchez's new go-to guy, 5 catches, 170 yards, a TD. Jeremy Maclin, 93 yards, caught a touchdown with 7 minutes left in the fourth quarter to luckily make it worth your while. Green Bay's defense, again, went off yesterday with 3 touchdowns. Moving on to our next game, low-scoring affair here was Drew Stanton to Michael Floyd 2 times in the first quarter, and that was it. In this one, Calvin Johnson, only 5 catches, 59 yards. Golden Tate, 3 for 41. Joy Bell had a good day, gave you all-purpose double digits. I'm really shocked at Detroit not being able to score a touchdown. You know, just surprised. I give ultimate credit to the Cardinals defense, who were absolutely lights out in that one. But to me, there's no excuse. If you got Matt Stafford, you got Calvin Johnson, who dropped a pass. I don't know what's with Calvin. He's been dropping passes this year. But just a disappointing effort. I had Stafford yesterday. I'm quite sure for anybody who had a Detroit line outside of Joy Bell, you knew it was going to be a tough go in Arizona, but you just did not see the Lions not even being able to touch pay dirt. Just extremely disappointing there. Larry Fitzgerald did suffer a sprained MCL. I'm hearing it's a grade 2. So it's nothing of a major magnitude. He is expected to play this week at Seattle. Nonetheless, his numbers were down in that game, and that was something that we wanted to look out with quarterback Drew Stanton. For Detroit, you know, I think they'll just give it another go next week to see how that one plays out. And the last game, it was the New England Patriots. We spoke about Jonas Gray. It was all about him yesterday. 199 yards, 4 TDs. Brady had 257, 2 touchdowns, 2 interceptions. Gronk spoke on him, 71 yards and a TD. The Patriots just steamrolled the Colts, really left the Colts. That crowd just, it took them out early. I mean, this Patriots team is hitting on all cylinders. Again, Andrew Luck, 303 yards, two TDs. They did a great job, the Patriots did, of holding T.Y. Hilton in check. He was quiet yesterday, did not reach the end zone. Andrew Luck was the leading rusher, and I think that should tell you something. He only had three carries for 15 yards, so there was not even a Colt player who could get more than 15 yards rushing. To make matters worse for them, they lost Ahmad Bradshaw. It is feared that he has a broken ankle, which obviously will put him out for the year. So that's just going to make running the football that much more tougher for the Indianapolis Colts. We are going to run to another commercial break real quick. When we come back, we're going to have Mike on with us from NFL Fantasy Football. So make sure you stay tuned. It's the NFL Exporter. You are listening to The Extra Point. We're going to catch this quick commercial break, and we'll be right back after these messages.
Victor Gardner began the Fantasy Sports and Politics brand with the idea of combining two of his passions into a radio show. He then learned that politics were 95% of sports. When you tune into the Fantasy Sports and Politics show every Saturday at 1 p.m. Eastern, Mr. FSP himself, Vic Gardner, and Jerry the Master Taylor will go over the weekend sports, prep you for your upcoming fantasy games, and spark a debate politicians would love to hear. That's the FSP show every Saturday at 1 p.m. on blogtalkradio.com/VICHBK. You can listen at spotonradio.web.com after the show as it streams 24/7, 365 for other informative programs as well. Information, motivation, variety.
All right, everybody, thanks for coming back to The Extra Point with the NFL Exporter. And now I'm going to bring in my special guest with me today. This is going to be Mike. He's joining us from NFL Fantasy Football. I had a chance to hook up with him online on Facebook. They've got a great page going over there. So I wanted to bring in a fresh body here to come on the show, chop it up with us, get some different predictions and some different insight and advice for fantasy owners. So without further ado, let's bring them on. How you doing today, Mike?
Good. How you doing today, Porter?
Oh, man, I'm doing great, man. Thanks for joining us today. And so, man, let's go ahead and hop right into it, Mike. Right now, if you're in the NFL.com league, you've got 2 weeks left until the playoffs start. If you are in Yahoo, ESPN, or maybe some other leagues, you got 3 weeks left, as those NFL format is a 13-week season, first week bye for division winners. Six teams get in all of the leagues. It's normally a 14-week schedule with the top four teams getting in. And so, man, I'm going to throw some names at you. And, man, I think it'll be great for fantasy owners to be able to get some advice. Like I said, you've got an outstanding page, and we're definitely going to make sure before you get out of here, you leave your Facebook and your other information so we can keep up with you. But I'm going to throw some names at you, and just let me know what you think. We're going to start with New York Giants running back Rashard Jennings. Obviously, he was one of the top running backs the first quarter of fantasy football, suffered the MCL sprain. Just returned to action yesterday. Had 18 carries, so I think it's encouraging to know that he's going to be able to handle the workload moving forward, even though he only had 59 yards. Coming down the stretch run here, he's going to be back in a lot of owners' lineups as he was on the bench healing, or a lot of people were able to pick him up off the waiver wire. What are your expectations for Rashard Jennings moving forward the rest of the season?
Well, if you were lucky enough to get him off the waiver wire, that's phenomenal. He had, 18 carries yesterday. I think the Giants were kind of easing him back in. If you noticed in yesterday's game, when it came down to about the two-minute drill, the Giants were still in the game, down by 6 points. But it was Williams was out there, and it wasn't Jennings. That's a little concerning to me. I think his knee might have been a little tweaked up there towards the end of the game. But still, it's promising that, you know, all the reports coming out are, you know, there's no setback. Everything still looks good. He has Dallas next week, which is, you know, going to be a good matchup for them. I think the Giants, you know, obviously being a division game, should be a very good game. He had 7 targets in the game. So PPR leagues, he's obviously coming back. He's still going to be a very valuable player. I think Jennings can really help you down a stretch run. He's definitely someone to target in trades if your league hasn't passed the trade deadline yet. That's someone you kind of want to go after at this point.
Yeah, I have to agree with you there. I think the thing that helps him out the best is, that week and as you mentioned, some of these defenses like the Redskins, the Cowboys, Philadelphia. Another couple, I guess the first three guys are NFC East guys. What's your take on DeSean Jackson? Obviously, he's a very passionate guy. He likes to win, but has a little trouble sometimes, you know, kind of keeping things in-house or close to the chest. You know, when they lost at Minnesota a couple weeks ago, although he was unhappy with the loss, he had four catches, 120 yards, and a TD, so he's happy about that. Yesterday, only four catches for 35 yards. Obviously, you can see his frustration on his face and for that whole team. What are your prospects for DeSean Jackson? Obviously, his production is going to be tied to our RG3, so maybe you want to, you know, touch lightly on both of those guys, and particularly Jackson. I think we all kind of see the writing on the wall for RG3, but how do you think DeSean Jackson's season is going to fare if RG3 continues to play the way that he is right now?
Well, one of the nice things about DeSean Jackson is he's kind of been quarterback-proof lately. You know, the last three games he's had seven targets, and six targets. DeSean Jackson is what he is. He's a guy that's not going to get a lot of targets. He's not going to get a lot of receptions, but he is the big play guy. He'll get open, he'll catch the ball, and just like he did at Minnesota, four catches for 120 yards. That's 30 yards a catch. You're not going to get a lot of receivers that are like that. He's definitely not a big PPR guy. But in standard leagues, he is a stud. Of course, you're also going to have the same thing that you had the problem with this week, four catches for 35 yards. DeSean Jackson is what DeSean Jackson is. You got to put up with it either way. Quarterback, to me, doesn't matter on that team. DeSean Jackson, he's going to run deep. If you can get him the ball, if you get him the ball, he'll get you some numbers. Playing against San Fran next week, it's not a great matchup, but still, all you got to do is break one or two, and there's your numbers, and you're good. You're set for the week with this guy. The other problem with them is, RG3 kind of mentioned after the game, he funny enough, put himself in elite quarterback talk with, you know, when Peyton's guys don't play, you know, Peyton doesn't put up good numbers. When Aaron Rodgers' guys don't play, they don't put up good numbers. Well, that's not really saying a lot about your team, you know, and it's DeSean Jackson getting back on Instagram this week ain't helping matters either. And this team seems to be just setting up for falling apart at this point in time. And, you know, maybe it's time for them to start looking towards the draft, because that's about all they got going on at the moment.
Okay, yeah, I definitely agree with you there. Now, what about LeSean McCoy? Obviously led the league in rushing last year, had nine touchdowns, but this year only 200-yard rushing games. You know, taking a quick look at his stats here, I would think outside of yardage, because he's certainly a guy who can get it all purpose. The thing that's stunning, only two rushing touchdowns. How do you see his schedule, things working out the rest of the way? I see some easier matchups, you know, Tennessee at Dallas. Twice they play Dallas, and then Washington and the Giants. Is he a guy that you can remain confident in because the schedule is going to get softer? Or what are some other issues that you see why he may not be performing so well? I know that the Eagles' offensive line, which arguably was the best line in football last year when you were talking about Travis Kelce and Evan Mathis and Hermines and Jason Peters and Lane Johnson. So is there anything else besides the offensive line that's holding McCoy back? Is it the offensive line? And, again, how do you see his matchups working out the rest of the way? Again, besides Seattle, Tennessee, two games against Dallas, Washington and the Giants, seem like he has a pretty soft schedule to perhaps make his owners a little bit more happy. But the two touchdowns, rushing touchdowns this year, very mind-boggling at this point.
The thing that made LeSean McCoy so valuable last year was all the catches, all the receptions that he brought to the table. And he's just not getting those this year. I mean, the last four games, he's had three receptions, two receptions, one and one. And that's just not getting it done for his owners and for the Eagles, for that matter. It seems like Darren Sproles has come in and taken a good chunk of that yardage and everything away. Now, Sproles is a very, very valuable player to this Eagles offense. And he's come in. Everyone in Philly kind of assumed that Sproles would pick up where DeSean Jackson left off and take a lot of those touches. But it really doesn't seem that way. It seems like, you know, aside from him not getting the catches and everything, LeSean McCoy just seems like he's running very tentative at the line, too. It was, you know, it's a good sign. He got 23 carries this week. And, you know, last week he had 12 carries, but he only had 19 yards. The weeks leading up to this, 21 carries for 83 yards, 23 carries, 117 yards, 12 carries for 19, 23 for 88. If you forgive that Carolina game, LeSean McCoy is starting to become the running back that you drafted him to be. You know, he's not going to get the catches. Mark Sanchez is just not looking his way. They're not dumping the ball off to him anymore. It seems like Sproles has picked up that part. But, you know, he's got you know, he's got a lot of potential going forward. And as long as they keep feeding the ball 20 times, he can get you 80, 100 yards and maybe sneak in for a touchdown or two. And the other problem is around the goal line. Chris Polk has been the guy that's been vulturing the touchdown. So this Chip Kelly offense seems to be relying on a bunch of people now, not just LeSean McCoy. If you can get anything valuable for him, now might be the time to trade him. I mean, he does have that soft schedule, but with the other players vulturing his touches, you know, if you can sell the 23 carries for 88 yards and the other weeks before that, you know, try to get something decent for him.
Yeah, I totally have to agree with you there. What's your take on Larry Fitzgerald? I know he had a second-grade MCL sprain yesterday. Not too serious. It's going to keep him out against Seattle, which hasn't traditionally been a favorable matchup for him. But obviously, we've seen Fitzgerald's numbers on the higher side be tied to Carson Palmer. When Palmer's been in there, Fitzgerald has had a ton of success. When Palmer has not been in there, he seems to get lost in the shuffle. How do you see fantasy owners should use him down the stretch? Who, by the way, just wanted to take a quick look. I know that when it comes to their schedule, very tough defenses down the stretch. They've got Seattle this week, an easy game against Atlanta, and then they finish with KC, Seattle, San Francisco, and St. Louis. So five by his next six games. These matchups are very difficult. We're talking about top 10 defenses on top of a new quarterback. How do you see things working out for Larry Fitzgerald? How should fantasy owners handle playing him?
Sell, sell, sell. If you can get rid of Larry Fitzgerald now, do it. He's got that grade 2 sprain in his knee with the MCL. He's been playing through it. He played through it this week, and he'll continue to play through it, and it's going to bother him. But in my opinion, Larry Fitzgerald is now the number 3 receiver on that team. It seems like Michael Floyd has a better rapport with Drew Stanton, and Josh Brown seems to be really stepping up there. Actually, both Brown receivers are the guys that are starting to come on. And, I mean, 4 targets this week. Drew Stanton just doesn't seem to have, you know, that rapport with Larry Fitzgerald. As soon as Carson Palmer, when Palmer came back, it was so exciting for Fitzgerald owners because we just knew he was going to be the man, you know. 9 receptions for 112 yards against St. Louis, and, you know, 5 receptions for 70 against Dallas, 7 catches for 160 against Philly. You always seem to torch, you know, but coming down the stretch now, I mean, 4 targets yesterday, 2 catches for 33 yards. It's just not going to get it done. If you can get anything for Larry Fitzgerald at this point, I'd say take it because it's not looking good for him.
Yeah, I agree with you 100% there. Now let's talk about Marshawn Lynch. You know, this is a guy who's been kind of an up and down year. Obviously, he's been the main reason over these past 3 years that the Seattle Seahawks really got on the map in the first place. It's been him, you know, averaging about 1,350 yards rushing, 12 to 15 TDs. You know, over the last 3 years, obviously was instrumental in them making it to the Super Bowl last year. I think if you look now, sometimes winning can overshadow defects on the team, but you figure they lost Golden Tate. This is a team that's not built to pass the football. They're really about running the football, and it's amazing that they – I'm having a hard time understanding why Seattle doesn't even want to resign him. I mean, I understand that you have to do what's best for the organization moving forward. They are going to have to sign Russell Wilson again soon. Lynch, upset, and rightfully so, over in the offseason. I've seen a lot of his teammates getting big contracts, sat out a couple of days in training camp, but came in. He's not going to lose the money. And, you know, got off to a great start this year, went through a little quiet stretch, has come back strong the last 3 weeks. He's a guy, you know, he doesn't talk to the media. You know, he takes his fines weekly. You've heard all type of rumors about, you know, the Seahawks not bringing him back, which I think everybody knows but doesn't understand considering just how good of a running back this guy is. And, you know, he seemed to kind of take in a stride. But with the rumors kind of resurfacing and getting louder lately, it seemed to frustrate him. And when I did my fantasy rankings for running backs in the preseason, I had Lynch at number 5. I just told people to be careful this season that at any given time, if he was maybe perhaps rubbed the wrong way, which it seems to be happening now, you just wonder, you know, is he going to get to the point where he says, you know, F it, let me just reserve my body. And you know, it's obvious that everybody can see what I can do and wait till another team wants me. I don't want to come out here and give it my all. This team isn't going to have me back. I get hurt, and then I can't sign. I can't really cash in next year. So do you see these off-the-field issues perhaps becoming an issue on the field for Lynch? Or do you think he just continues to be the beast that he is, goes on about his business, and finds new life elsewhere next year? I guess, in other words, should fantasy owners be afraid that all these rumors and outside distractions could essentially affect his play on the football field?
Well, these distractions and everything have been plaguing him pretty much all year. And let me tell you, if there's one player who has a proper nickname, man, Beast Mode is it. This guy shows up week in and week out and puts it together, man. Against the Giants, 21 carries, 140 yards, and 4 touchdowns. Kansas City, you put up 124 yards on 24 carries against that defense. Now, granted, he didn't get in the end zone, but neither did any other running back playing against that Kansas City defense. That is a tough defense to run against, and he put up 124 against them. He's having problems. It's obvious he's having problems. At halftime yesterday, he stayed on the bench when the rest of the team went into the locker room. Pete Carroll said it was, he was just fatigued. That's not the issue. He has problems with the team. But on the field, once he gets in there, he puts that helmet on, he becomes Beast Mode, and he gets it done.
Okay, sounds good. Let's go ahead and move on to our next guy, Trey Mason. You know, interesting prospect here. Now, there was a couple weeks ago, there were a ton of guys who due to injuries and some other things, hit the waiver wire. It was like Anthony Dixon and Bryce Brown for the Bills. It was Trey Mason. It was Jerick McKinnon. It was Denard Robinson. You know, it was a week where all these running backs came available. And for Trey Mason, I certainly thought he was the best running back for St. Louis's backfield, but I didn't like his matchups. He had Kansas City, which he had 3 points. He had San Francisco 6, Arizona 7. So I didn't like his matchups immediately. But looking the rest of the way at San Diego, Oakland, Washington, you know, has a couple of tough games at the end of the year, Arizona and at Seattle again, but he has the Giants in between. How do you like him? I think he's made it through his toughest stretch of the season. Very tough runner, a lot of explosion, finishes his runs, always moving forward. For fantasy owners who were able to get him, maybe even, you know, late in the season, you need some help at running back. What's your thoughts on Trey Mason for the St. Louis Rams?
I'll tell you, when it comes to the St. Louis Rams, in next year's fantasy draft, my last round pick is going to be whoever their third running back is. Because it seems like every year this guy just steps up. Last year it was Zach Stacy. This year it's Trey Mason. And, man, this guy came out of nowhere. And then finally this past week they relied on him. They gave him 29 carries, and he rewarded them by putting up 113 yards. He ended that game for St. Louis last week. He was a stud, man. The only problem you got to worry about with St. Louis is if they lose control of the game. They start losing, you know, start getting behind, they're quick to abandon the run. But if they stick with the run, like you said, with a lot of those nice matchups coming up, he's the guy. He's going to get a lot of carries. You know, he's not going to be big in the reception category. I mean, he had 6 targets against Arizona, but other than that, 1, 2, and 2 the last 4 weeks. He's not going to be a big PPR guy, but he's the guy that's going to be carrying the ball. I can see him getting 80 yards next week against San Diego easily. But the only thing you got to worry about is if St. Louis gets behind, they're going to abandon the run. So Trey Mason is going to be good. But if you got him, odds are you probably don't have him as your number 2 running back. You probably have him as your 3. And you can plug them in there in a flex spot.
Definitely agree there. I think the other thing, like you, just to piggyback off what you said, when it comes to the Rams as well, usually they don't have the ball that much. They did a great job converting third downs yesterday, and with the way that their defense stopped Denver, were able to get that many attempts. So I think he's a very effective player. You just can't count on 29 carries on a week-in and week-out basis. Moving over now to Julio Jones, here's a guy who definitely, you know, continues to be the top target for Matty Ice and the Atlanta Falcons. Certainly a very explosive, gifted, talented young player. But he is going through a serious drought right now. It has been 6 straight games. He has not scored a touchdown. And let me make sure I got this right, because it might be 7. 1, 2, 3, 4, excuse me, 7 straight games. That he has not scored a touchdown. He has not scored a touchdown since week 3 of the season. And so as he continues to get tons of targets, continues to get, you know, yards, you know, in that stretch, he did have 200-yard games and 1 game over 80 yards. But what do you see going on with Julio Jones here? What's with the 7-game drought with no touchdowns? And you know, kind of in some matchups, you know, against Chicago, yesterday at Carolina, not even getting over 60 yards. What do you see going on there?
Well, the problem with Julio Jones stems from Matt Ryan, and Matt Ryan's problems stem from the bad offensive line they have there. I think they're on their fourth or fifth center on that offensive line, and it's not going well there. I mean, obviously, yeah, they're in first place in the NFC South, but they have four wins, you know, and that's not saying much for the NFC South. I mean, but the targets are still there, and that's the important thing for a guy who's a wide receiver. He's still getting the targets. The last 2 weeks he had 11 targets. That's what he does with 8 catches against Tampa Bay, 6 catches against Carolina. Sometimes it'll be 100 yards. Sometimes it'll be 60. That's the problem. The problem is the offensive line is not giving Matt Ryan enough time to pass the ball, so these guys aren't having enough time to break out of their routes and to get downfield. My advice on Julio Jones is don't sell him too low, and the targets are still there. If you want to trade him, go ahead and trade him, but get some fair value for him. You know, I made a trade earlier this year that was pretty much Dez Bryant for Julio Jones straight up. I've been reaping the benefits of that trade. But nowadays, you're not going to get that trade. I mean, you're going to be looking more middle of the pack, you know, 12 to 15 range for guys for Julio Jones. But don't sell him too low because the targets are still there, and with the targets will come the touchdowns.
Yeah, I have to agree. I think that's the biggest thing with Julio Jones is especially, too, Atlanta is in the playoff hunt. So as the season progresses, you know, like you said, he's going to get the targets. He's going to continue to be a heavy part of the offense. The other thing that I'm seeing, too, it doesn't look like they're taking advantage of matchups. When I peeked in on that game a couple of times yesterday because I was playing against Jones and I had Benjamin going, there were some one-on-one opportunities with him on the outside in the red zone, and they didn't take the shots that I've seen him take over the years, which are, you know, the fade routes, the back shoulder catches. They're kind of trying to rely on this wide receiver screen. That Matt Ryan is throwing extremely wild. The timing seems off. Defenses seem hip to that. But I think Jones is another guy who, at this point, you're keeping your fingers crossed because for most people, he was their number one receiver, and he's certainly not chipping in number one receiver type numbers. Another guy we're going to talk about, Cam Newton. I think we all know his struggles. Just wanted to get some more insight on it. Again, myself coming into the season, I had Newton ranked 19 at quarterback. I thought on the upside, he was certainly a guy who can get you 2,000, 2,500 passing, you know, another 800 on the ground, you know, 20 passing TDs, 5 or 6 on the ground. So overall, his numbers would add up. But on the lower side of things, I looked at an offense that I didn't like their running backs. They can't run, you know, Stewart and D'Angelo. These guys are older now. You know, what could be, you know, like a 30 or 40-yard run for Giovanni Bernard or an Ellington or some of these younger backs? These guys aren't getting 10 yards a pop. They lost Jordan Gross, the outstanding left tackle. Now we've heard that they've been playing with four undrafted free agents, sometimes all of them in at once. You look at the passing game, only Olsen and Benjamin, you know, Avant and Cotri, slower, older receivers, can't create separation, and it's easy for a defense on any given play to double-team or take out Olsen or Benjamin. So I just see Newton limited, and then I'm factoring his own mechanics. He's never been the most accurate passer, seems a bit erratic at times. I think understandable considering before yesterday's game, he had been sacked 19 times in the past four games. But, again, schedule is going to be soft down the stretch. How confident can owners be in having Newton, or should they just look elsewhere? I'm pulling up Carolina real quick. Coming down the stretch here, Newton is going to have, after the bye week, Minnesota, New Orleans, Tampa Bay, Atlanta in four out of their last five games.
Well, those teams definitely look juicy to play against. But let me tell you the problem with Cam Newton. Cam Newton gets beat up a lot. He had 9 sacks against Philly. Yesterday he went out in the first quarter and had to get checked for a possible concussion. This offensive line is letting anybody through. It's a sieve. They're like one of those rotating doors that you have to go through is kind of what they look like right now. He's running for his life, and normally that would, you know, translate in some decent rushing yards, but his rushing yards lately, 24 yards, 43 yards, 6 yards, 30 yards. It's not what you draft Cam Newton for. Yeah, you know when you get Cam Newton, you're drafting him, you're going to get 2,000 to 2,500 passing yards, but you're relying on those 800 yards and for pretty much him to be their goal line back, and he hasn't been that this year. He's been fumbling the ball. He's been throwing away the ball at interceptions. It's just not good for Cam Newton right now, and I don't think you can rely on him down the stretch.
I agree with you there. No matter who's at quarterback, if your offensive line is not together, then you're certainly going to struggle. Speaking of quarterbacks who are struggling right now, What's your take on Drew Brees? I know that he's still an elite passer. You know, I don't want to take credit away off of one season, but I think it's inevitable that when you're passing the football 40 to 50 times a game, a couple interceptions, some you know, losing some fumbles, sacks. You know, if you're in a league where you know you're getting points taken off for sacks, so I think just with how much he passes the football, and then he's spreading the football around. I think Drew Brees right now, I think I looked at his last five games, he's averaging connecting with nine different receivers. So not only is it frustrating that he's not putting the numbers up that you would expect. I'm looking at standard format. Drew Brees has only had two games this year where he has over 20 points. Certainly not what you expect out of a second-round pick, which is where most people were getting him, first or second round, depending on how deep the league was, what type of format, what may have you. And I'm looking, and he's only had three games this year where he doesn't have an interception. So as much as we love Drew Brees and have come accustomed to seeing him be that guy, he's certainly not producing at the level we've seen. Has become a bit of a turnover machine. You know, how do you see things working out for the Saints? I think right now their team overall just isn't good, and a lot of times players' production can get handcuffed to how bad, or I should say, the way that the Saints are underperforming.
I completely agree with you, man. The Drew Brees is a guy who was drafted as a top three quarterback. He has not been a top five quarterback in any week in standard leagues this season. That is a shocking stat. Last week, yesterday, 255 yards and a touchdown, no picks, and yeah, three games with no picks, but two of those came in the last 4 weeks. It's promising. He has potential, and I think the idea is with Mark Ingram back, Mark Ingram should run the ball 30 times a game, and that should open things up for Drew Brees and help with the offense. I don't like him. I don't like him down the stretch. I think there's going to be people in your league who don't listen to the show, who don't do their homework and just hear the name Drew Brees and immediately start salivating. That's the guy you want to trade with. Get rid of Drew Brees if you can. Try to pick up somebody decent, you know, down the stretch. I think Mark Sanchez has a lot of potential coming up. You can get him and, you know, a good running back or a good wide receiver, something you need. Drew Brees is worth trading at this point.
Yeah, I definitely agree if you can get the value back. I'm looking at this schedule, and if you can make it into the playoffs, I think that's where he's going to be most effective. He always ends up somehow, some way. Well, really, he's been much better. And this is shocking. The Saints were a team that over the past, 3 to 5 years, if nothing else, you knew that playing in the Superdome, this was a team that was going to get 30 points with their eyes closed. He was just going to kill it. Not been the case, but they play Baltimore next week, another tough matchup at Pittsburgh. They don't play well on the road outside, but looking at the last four games, which is going to be playoff times, really 14, 15, and 16, they got Carolina coming in, they play at Chicago, who's playing no defense, and you got Atlanta coming back in. So I think that there is some hope for Drew Brees coming down the stretch run here. Moving on, I've got Vincent Jackson for Tampa Bay. I know his name was in trade talks, couldn't get it done, doesn't seem motivated. Mike Evans seems to have taken over the main spot there. How do you see your prospects? Another fickle situation because most people drafted him. Some people drafted him to be their first receiver overall. If that were the case, boy, I certainly hope you cashed in on a free agent market and had a good second-round pick. But if you got stuck with like a combination of like Vincent Jackson and Keenan Allen, you've had a very rough year. Any Vincent Jackson down the stretch?
Oh, there's hope. You're not going to get much in on the trade market right now for him, so you're really just kind of stuck with him. But there is promise down there, okay? And so Mike Evans has stepped up and pretty much become the number one receiver. Vincent Jackson was dealt like a double-edged sword last week with Josh McCown coming back. So Glennon goes back to the bench. Glennon was his quarterback. Glennon was hitting him. We're 12 targets in, 16 targets against Atlanta. He was Mike Glennon's boy. Now Evans steps in, and Mike Evans, oh my goodness, has this boy shined. If you got Mike Evans, you are a happy camper right now. But the good news about this is people will start realizing Evans' talent, and he's going to take the double coverage away from Vincent Jackson. He's going to start getting the targets again. He'll start getting open. The safety will start moving over to Evans' side of the field, and that'll open things up for Jackson. So I think there's promise down the stretch. I don't think he can really drop him right now, but I really don't see him much more as a wide receiver 4 going forward.
All right, great stuff there. We're going to run to one last commercial break, so stay tuned. We've got Mike from NFL Fantasy Football on the Extra Point today, giving us some great insight for fantasy owners. Again, we're 2 or 3 weeks away from your playoffs starting, so a lot of interesting and trending topics. So we'll be right back at the Extra Point NFL Explorer. Just stay tuned.
With a breakdown of Sunday NFL games, Lance, the NFL exporter Goodman, points out the good, the bad, and the ugly of the predictions made on the Master Plan. Getting you ready for Monday Night Football, Lance brings you the Extra Point. During the NFL season, Lance comes to you live from blogtalkradio.com/BICHBK at 7 p.m. Eastern. You can listen at spotonradio.web.com after the show as it streams 24/7, 365, and listen to other informative programs as well. With a growing following, jump on board for the Extra Point with Lance Goodman at blogtalkradio.com/BICHBK at 7 p.m. Eastern. You can also check him out on The Master Plan with Jerry Taylor at 10 a.m. Eastern. Information, motivation, variety.
All right, everyone. Welcome back to the Extra Point, NFL Exporter. And we've got Mike from NFL Fantasy Football joining us today. Did a great job during the first segment. Let's hop right back into it. I'm just throwing some names at Mike. Again, we're 2 to 3 weeks away from your fantasy football playoffs starting. So right now, a very critical time. Some people may already be in. Some people may be already out. But most people probably still very much alive. I know most leagues very competitive, especially with how wild and crazy this fantasy football season has been thus far. Mike, let me throw at you Jonas Gray. Here's a guy who, for New England Patriots running back, once Stephen Ridley went down, we all thought that Brandon Bolden, perhaps James White, even Shane Vereen would kind of pick the workload up. But Vereen has continued to be the change of pace back. Bolden or White have not stepped foot on the field. That first Thursday night football game, we all seen some guy named Gray come out against the Jets. And we were like, who the hell is this? You know, what is Belichick up to this time? Been quiet up to this point. Had the one good game that they had a blowout against the Bears at home. Had 17 catches, 86 yards. But do you believe yesterday, obviously, we all missed out on that. I seen he was starting in 1.3% of leagues. So I don't know what play people maybe outside of New England Patriot fans or his family had him. Obviously, he's not going to put those numbers up again. But moving forward, is this someone that you can rely on, or – is this a guy who we're going to see a trend where maybe every 2 to 3 weeks he pops up, which is very difficult to gauge? I'm looking at his schedule right now. Next week at home against Detroit, going to be tough. They don't give it up on the ground. At Green Bay, at San Diego, perhaps. Then finishing Miami and the Jets, two teams who don't give it up on the ground. So what do you think for Jonas Gray? You got to hop on him while he's hot. I would say for teams who are in the middle to losers at this point, you know, if you're in the top of your league, you're not going to be able to get him off the waiver wire. So I guess the team fighting for a playoff spot. What do you think? Can this guy actually help your team, or is this an anomaly? Will we not even see him, you know, maybe put up 80 yards and a touchdown again?
This guy is going to win somebody $1 million this week on DFS leagues. Let me tell you, Jonas Gray goes out 38 carries, 199 yards, and 4 touchdowns. This guy was on the practice squad week 7. I mean, what the heck, man? This came out of nowhere. And let me tell you, if you own them, trade them. If you can get them off the waiver wire, pick them up and trade them. There are people in your league that are going to just be salivating over this guy. You got to remember, he's in a Belichick offense. There's no running backs in a Belichick offense. Stephen Ridley was barely worth a 6th-round pick this year. If that, Bolden, White, Vereen, Gray, who knows who's going to have the big game next week? They don't run the ball that much in Tom Brady's offense out there in New England. You got to get rid of this guy, trade him. There's not going to be another week like this. His value will never be as high as it is right now, and you can get some really good value for a guy like Jonas Gray.
Man, I have to agree with you 100%. I think that is excellent advice. Scoop him up, trade him. People will definitely be salivating over this guy. C.J. Anderson, running back Denver Broncos. Monty Ball re-aggravated his groin, so we might as well say he's done for the year. Hillman's going to be out another 2 weeks. I think the only problem is, you look at the matchups, they're playing Miami in Denver. You know, Miami's very tough against the run. At KC, very tough against the run. Bills come in very tough against the run. Now, I would just assume those games against Miami and Buffalo in Denver are probably going to end up being blowouts to some capacity, even though, again, those defenses are tough. But over the next 3 weeks, he's going to get the majority of the workload with ball gone. And even when Hillman gets back, I think this guy has played well enough. Yesterday, 8 catches, 86 yards, excellent for PPR value. Didn't do much on the ground. But how do you see things working out for him, and particularly the next 3 weeks against some very tough defenses, especially against the run?
Yeah, C.J. Anderson, I see him as a little bit of the opposite of Jonas Gray. Jonas Gray never catches the ball. C.J. Anderson is going to be a PPR monster in this offense. There is nobody else. Ball is droppable. Hillman is droppable. These guys are not going to be back, and if they come back, it will be during the playoffs. You don't know what you can expect. Ball was on the field for, like, 2 plays, and all of a sudden he's hurt again. You can't rely on these guys. C.J. Anderson is going to be the man going forward in Denver. He's the guy you want. If you're in a PPR league, I mean, he had 10 targets last week. This is the guy you want. This is the guy you're going to want to pick up. Peyton Manning is going to be looking for him. He is the drop-off guy. He's the guy that is going to get all the carries when this team's ahead by 30 yards or 30 points, I apologize. This is the man going forward. I like C.J. Anderson.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. I think because he can catch out the backfield and is going to get the full workload, definitely like the prospects there in the Peyton Manning offense. Next, let's talk Ryan Matthews, a guy who a lot of people had. Either you were able to pick him up off the waiver wire or you had him sitting on your bench for forever. That was a pretty strong start yesterday, 16 carries, 70 yards. They got some tough matchups, though. I'm looking next week, St. Louis. After that, at Baltimore, New England comes in. Denver week 15, so I'm not sure if he's a guy who, if your team, I don't know. You know, he really hadn't done much this year due to the injury situation, so I don't know if he played into a team's success of getting in the playoffs or not, but how do you see things working out for him? I think with Brandon Oliver kind of falling off, Donald Brown's now an afterthought. Matthews should get stronger, kind of like Rashard Jennings, and handle the workload. But some tough matchups coming up the next 3 weeks again. St. Louis, stout against the run. Baltimore, top 10 against the run. New England, certainly a defense that has improved vastly. That game's going to be in New England. And probably not a lot of running going on there. How do you think owners should handle Ryan Matthews?
Well, Ryan Matthews is pretty much going to be the man going forward in San Diego. And when they get the ball down by the goal line, that's when Brandon Oliver is going to be stepping in and he's going to get the carries. Donald Brown has become an afterthought. If you own him, drop him. There's no reason for him to be on a roster right now. But going forward, Ryan Matthews, in those matchups, he's going to get the carries. He's going to get the yards. He's basically going to be what he was this past week, 16 carries for 70 yards, 1 catch for 5 yards. That's basically what you're going to get out of Ryan Matthews from here on out. Some people say they eased him in, and yeah, he played on 32 of the offensive snaps this week. But he is what he is. He's going to be 16 carries for 70 yards. That is going to be Ryan Matthews. You're not going to get a lot of 25, 30 carry games out of him anymore.
Yeah, I agree with you there. He's a guy I've never been high on him with due to the injury risk. I do think he's going to get the workload, but I don't care for those matchups. Steve Smith Sr., wide receiver, Baltimore Ravens. Here's a guy, when I seen him come over in the offseason, I kind of think where his numbers are now is kind of what I expected. It just happened in a different fashion. In his first 6 games, he had 4 games over 100 yards, 5 games over 70. The last month, 4 straight games, hasn't had more than 67 yards in the game, has not found the end zone. Torrey Smith kind of picking up the slack now. How do you see things working out for Steve Smith, a senior guy who many people placed a lot of trust in and felt they could rely on at that receiver position, but he's cooled off a ton?
Well, the NFL has caught up to him. That's the problem. He's still getting the targets. Against Cincinnati, 9 targets. Against Pittsburgh, 8 targets. Tennessee, 7 targets. Torrey Smith is a lot like Deshaun Jackson. He's going to get down the field and he'll get his, 5-6 targets, 4 catches, 120 yards, or 4 catches for 30 yards. That's going to be Torrey Smith. Steve Smith, the problem with him is now the NFL has realized what he is and what he can do, and they're now shutting it down. 9 targets against Cincinnati, only 3 catches for 35 yards. 8 catches against Pittsburgh, 5 catches for 30 yards. 7 targets against Tennessee, and this is Tennessee for crying out loud. 3 catches for 17 yards. He's just not getting it done anymore. Now that he's getting covered, it looks like his age is catching up with him, and he's just not the same Steve Smith. If there's an owner in your league that believes in him and believes you can get something for him, go get it, because there's just nothing there anymore.
Yeah, I agree. I'm not sold on him at all. Giovanni Bernard has been out injured, missed the last three games. Here was a guy who we all knew how talented he was, but wondered would he be able to handle the workload. Hugh Jackson loves to run the football. Bernard just ended up getting banged up right before getting injured. He was averaging 25 to 30 touches per contest every single week. So you love that about him, but smaller guy. Certainly, the injuries added up. And then how well Jeremy Hill has played actually looks better. I don't say looks better, but just as a pure runner, he looks more equipped to handle that workload, a much more powerful and bigger back. When Bernard does return, obviously he's going to have some tough games coming down the stretch against his own division, the likes of Pittsburgh, Cleveland. Well, I guess Pittsburgh defense isn't what it used to be, but he's got a kind of favorable schedule at Houston, at Tampa Bay, a couple games against Pittsburgh, at Cleveland, Denver. I guess the main thing we're looking at here, how much is Jeremy Hill now going to cut into Bernard's playing time once he's back and fully healthy?
Well, I think getting Bernard back, making sure that he will be 100% before he hits that field, and they have that luxury because they have Jeremy Hill. I really think that Cincinnati had it backwards at the beginning of this year, using Bernard as their main running back and Hill as a change of pace guy. I think it should be the other way around. I think Hill should be the running back and Bernard the change of pace guy. Hill is a much better runner. He's proven that the last couple of weeks, and I think he'll be the man going forward. And hopefully, if you have Gio Bernard, hopefully you have Jeremy Hill, and you can use that luxury. But if Bernard is going to play, Cincinnati believes he's the man, and you have to have him in your lineup. He is going to be a good running back when he plays.
Yeah, I agree. I think the big thing I may be worried about with Giovanni, and it seemed like they waited too long, before he got hurt. But I certainly think Jeremy Hill now is going to merit 10 to 12 carries a game, and I think he's going to get that goal line work. I think, like you said, they want to make sure Bernard is 100% healthy, and when he gets back, he stays that way. And with how impressive Jeremy Hill has been, hard to keep him off the football field. Real quick, talk to me about the Cleveland Browns backfield. It's a circus as far as I'm concerned. Ben Tate started off the year. Long story short, was ineffective. He was crying last week to the media about his carries. But in his last three starts after the Pittsburgh game, he had like 51 carries for 74 yards. They bring in Terrence West, does an excellent job. I think to everybody on the outside looking in, West and Crowell are better backs than Tate, but he was a free agent signing. But they had to, put him on the field to try to get a return on their investment. But West plays last week, 94 yards, a touchdown, the most effective running game that Cleveland had in the last five or six games. To my surprise, I had West starting this past week. I don't see his points going up. When I'm looking at my scoreboard, I click on it, I see a note. I guess this report came out late because nobody said anything to me about it. But because Isaiah Crowell had a better week in practice, they gave him the start. I mean, I'm like, what? The guy just had 94 yards for a touchdown last week. We're in week 11. For crying out loud, how are you still swapping out your running backs? Anything that you could talk about as far as helping owners try to make a decision on this circus that they're running of a backfield in Cleveland?
This is just that. This is a circus there in Cleveland. I would avoid this like the plague. This is just a bad situation to be in. The only back in that tandem I would like to own, because he really is the best running back, right? Isaiah Crowell is the best running back going forward for this team. He's just a straight downhill runner that'll beat you up right at the line of scrimmage, and he's kind of what they need there. And, I mean, they've invested money in Tate. They've invested a draft pick in West. And you just don't know week to week who's going to be starting. There's been more than enough people that started West last week and got nothing. There's more than enough people that started Tate the week before and saw West go off. So next week, who knows who it's going to be. They may bring up a practice squad guy and put him in there. Who knows? Nobody knows what's going on there in that offense, and I'm just staying away from it.
Yeah, I'm with you. I would completely stay away there. And just real quick, I think a big pickup could be either Cecil Shorts or Allen Hurns, with Allen Robinson going down with that foot stress fracture in his foot. He's gone for the year. Which one of those two guys would you give more upside, Allen Hurns or Cecil Shorts?
Cecil Shorts by far. Allen Hurns is going to be a guy that's kind of just he's going to be a lot like Deshaun Jackson. He's looking for the big plays. Cecil Shorts is the main receiver in that offense. He's the guy that's going to get the targets. He's going to get the receptions. The problem is that it's Jacksonville, and you're not going to do very well playing for Jacksonville. So Cecil Shorts is the man you want if you're going to own a Jacksonville wide receiver.
Definitely. All right, Mike. Well, great job today. We're definitely going to make sure we get you back sometime before the season is over. Before you get out of here, go ahead, man, your Facebook or your Twitter or anywhere where we can keep up with you. You know, definitely get some added insight and perspectives week to week setting these lineups ahead into the playoffs.
Sure. You can follow us on Facebook at NFL Fantasy Football. You can follow me. I'm Eagle Mike. There's also Super Breeze, and then there's the owner, Devin. We all post on there, and we all have some really good insight. And you can follow me directly on Twitter, at EagleMike89.
All right, great stuff, man. Mike, well, thanks for joining the show today, and I'll make sure that we get this body to have his information again through Facebook and Twitter. I'll post on the page and make sure everybody knows where to follow him. So great job, Mike. Really appreciate you coming on the show today.
Thanks a lot for having me, man. I appreciate it.
All right, no problem, everybody. Well, that's going to wrap up our show today. Before we get out of here, just make sure you join us this upcoming Sunday morning, 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, for the Master Plan with myself and Jerry Taylor. And make sure you're here with me next Monday for the Extra Point, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, getting you ready for Monday Night Football. Again, tonight's game, not too much to talk about. I'm quite sure everybody needs Pittsburgh Steelers players, Le'Veon Bell, Big Ben, Antonio Brown, perhaps Sean Sweetsham or the Steelers defense. If you have any Titans players, best of luck to you. Once again, it's the NFL Exporter. You were listening to The Extra Point. I am signing out of here, 1100.
And here we are. It all comes down to this. Tied ball game, no time left on the clock. With one more point, they'll pull out the win. Here's the snap. Holder puts it down. The kick is up. And the extra point is good. The NFL Exporter has done it again. No one on the corner line, swagger like her.